This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning to you, Roger. Good morning to the world from our WGN transmitting tower and, computer coverage around the world as well. Good to be with you here on this Saturday morning, but I am a little, I'm a lot disappointed because we were going to fly Air Orion to Champaign-Urbana today for the annual Salute to Agriculture Day and participate in the College Connections, the University of Illinois and the 4-H program and all that. They'll have a program at noon today. And then at 4:30, they're going to do the annual tailgate ramble right next door to the stadium. And there we were going to be a part of the program. As a matter of fact, we were going to, and they will be introduced, but I won't be there to do it, the college scholarship winners of the Orion and Gloria Samuelson Scholarship Program. And that will happen this afternoon at starting at 4:30 before the Illinois, Western Illinois football game. But we have a rule. We don't fly the Cessna in thunderstorm activity, and I'm looking now at a radar screen that's showing nothing but yellow and green and some blue and red across southern Illinois, well, across Illinois south of I-80, and that's right on our flight path down to Champaign-Urbana. So my pilot last evening said, not a good day for flying, so we're not going to be able to be there. We'll miss you all at the U of I activity, and we certainly want to congratulate our scholarship winners for their achievement. I think there's 8 students at the U of I that will participate in the scholarship program today, so sorry we can't be there, but Air Orion will not be flying to Champaign-Urbana today. And I guess yesterday was a very rainy day in the area as that continues to move south of I-80. So this morning, as you heard, we have Jim Fizell to visit about the end of the gardening season. We're going to talk about Husker Harvest Days coming up starting Tuesday. And a bright young lady in market analysis, Naomi Bloom, who is with the Stuart Peterson firm headquartered in West Bend, Wisconsin. And she'll be joining us and Max to talk markets this morning. So we're glad to be with you, glad to have you along, and I got to mention, Sandwich Fair continues through tomorrow, and then the county fair season for Illinois pretty well over for this summer season. But Jim Fizell standing by, and we'll get to Jim when we continue on the Saturday morning show. My first question for Jim Fizell this morning is, where did the summer go? And are we still getting rain on the gardens?
Summer went. It was not a real good one. As a matter of fact, it was a disaster as far as ours is concerned. But I'll tell you, we're 5 inches of rain this week, or right about 5 inches of rain, and that's more than enough. We had extremely wet spring, then we had that dry spell, and we're back to the wet again. It's hard to believe the summer's drawing to end. Actually, there's still 6 to 8 weeks left, but it seems like it's done. Of course, meteorological fall started last week, and in another 2 weeks, the regular solar fall will begin. So the season's winding down. But one thing I like to do at this time of year is to begin to evaluate the season. I don't have much to evaluate, but a lot of people do. Many first-time gardeners, too. How's your garden gone? How has it done for you this year? You need to take a look back at it. It's fairly easy to get discouraged if you haven't gone well for a couple of years. especially if this is your first year and it's been a complete disaster. But it's not really your fault most of the time. And even though we do make mistakes gardening, the weather has so much more to do with it than anything else. It's really amazing. And this has not been a particularly good gardening year. It had a cool, wet start, which was not the best for starting the garden. The soils were hard to work. Seedlings and plants drowned early. Then we had some nearly record cold weather in June and July with cool nights, not good for getting things started. In fact, the tomatoes and some of the other things we had out in the garden turned purple, which means they're not picking up stuff out of the soil, and the cool nights are the reason for that. Now that we've had cool nights lately after some really hot nights during the middle of summer, we don't have fruit set on a lot of things, or the fruit isn't ripening. The hot and dry July and August saw to that. September has been hot so far, but boy, it's sure been wet enough. In fact, a lot of gardens are just now drowning out completely. You know, I told you a couple of weeks ago that our tomatoes were fine. No more. They've wilted. Water standing around them. So that's it.
Well, I have to tell you, Gloria's tomato crop, which she plants one plant, puts it on the patio, and boy, it has produced tomatoes like crazy this year.
She has a raised bed. It's only one plant.
Yeah, right.
That's what it is. Well, that's great. You know, if you can keep the plants up out of the water, and of course, if you're planting in a field or in a garden out in the yard or something like that, that's pretty hard to do. In fact, you know, I really have to feel sorry for some of our farmers because they have no way to get away from this stuff. And as nice as some of the stuff looked, especially vegetable garden, truck garden farmers were saying here earlier this fall or later this summer, the crops looked really good. But then with all the rain that finally came, some of them have just kind of melted in the field, and that's some of our really good farmers that's happened to. So it's not just the home gardeners, but there are a lot of reasons for it. Now, actually, it's still time if you can get the thing to dry out a little bit to go out in your garden and plant some things. If you started some plants in the basement or under lights and can get them out in the garden, as I said before, we've got 6 to 8 weeks of good gardening to go. And even if we get an early frost, if you cover the plants up for one night, they usually can keep going. But if this is your first year, don't be disappointed. Those of us who've gardened for a lot of years can keep it in perspective because we have all these years of good experience, and we consider this just as an unusually bad one. Don't be disappointed. But one of the things you need to do is to keep some records of what happened this year. First of all, the weather. What was the weather like, if you can remember? Now, I do that two ways. I write it informally in my garden journal that I keep, but I also, every day on my business calendar, write the high and low temperature and the amount of rain that we got over the 24 hours previous. That's something you can go back and look at when you try to figure out why did things go so badly. If you have records that you can refer to, it makes it much easier. And I have records going back in this garden that I have out here for 35 years. It's just this gardening journal. It's not a journal at all. It's a spiral notebook, and at the top of a page each year I write down 1978 or 2018 or whatever it happens to be, and then just list the things by date that I did. When did I plant? What did I plant? You want to keep a record of what varieties did you try? Where did you get them? The garden center or Kmart or where. It's important to remember where they came from if you want to go back and get the ones next year. And you need to record what did work. Very important that you do record what did work, but it's equally important to record what went wrong. When you start making the plans for the following year, for next year, you need to be able to refer back to these things. And if you look through the garden catalogs, everything looks good and it's going to be the best thing that ever grew. However, if you have 1 year of experience and you look back in your journal and it says, oh my gosh, don't plant this thing, it did nothing, or it didn't grow, or it got so big but it didn't have any tomatoes on it, well, don't try that one. Try something else. Before I started keeping a gardening journal, I used to replant the same thing 2 or 3 years later that I had had a disaster with and wonder, why did I do that? I remember now, 3 years ago it didn't work, and it didn't work this time either. So keep track of that, and when you go to start planning for the following year, look back and see what things really did work. Another thing that you want to do, if you are at all interested in rotating your crops in the garden, which is a good idea when you're growing solanaceous things and some of these other things that can carry diseases from one year to another. Make a map, and all I do is just draw one of the pages in my journal, and I mark out the rows, and I say this was tomatoes, and this was cucumbers, and this was squash, and so forth, and keep it there. You can go back next year and say, oh, I planted tomatoes there, I think I'll move them over here. So a map is equally important. But another thing you need to do when you're doing this kind of checking out to what happened, a lot of times where we have a perennial garden and we're trying things, by the time we get around to deciding whether we need to dig something out, we forgot where it is. So if you have any plants out in your perennial garden that are going to need attention before they begin to grow next year, go out and put a wooden label on there and say, this is iris such and such. Put it in there so next spring when you can go out, you can say, oh, was this the red daylily or was this the orange daylily? You need to be able to check that back. And I use just wooden stakes, and I write on them with it's a carpenter's pencil, which impresses into the wood a little bit, so even if the carbon wipes off, you still got something left. Anyway, there are just a couple things to be concerned with here as we finish up the gardening year. And if you are a first-year gardener, please don't be discouraged. Every year we are optimistic about the following year being super great, and we anticipate that 2019 is going to be the one of the best ever.
Well, as you said last week, farmers and growers are always optimistic.
Absolutely. That's the only way we can keep going.
Well, I thank you for checking in, and we'll check in with you again next week here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's our visit with our specialist in ornamental horticulture and lawns and gardens and everything else, Jim Fizell, here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 22 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and quite a bit of rain still falling south of I-80 in central Illinois, extending across into Indiana. The farm outdoor show season pretty much coming to an end. There are a few more on the schedule, but it's winding down. There's one more big one next week, however, in Nebraska. Steve Alexander talked with the man who's running that show.
Fresh off the Big Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa, Matt Youngman, the National Events Director for Farm Progress Companies, has another big event, the Husker Harvest Days in Grand Island, Nebraska, Tuesday through Thursday, September 11th through the 13th. And Matt, I read a tweet that Husker Harvest Days might be 41 years young, but the show site will seem all new to visitors and guests this year. And tell us about the changes, please.
We're really excited to unveil this facility to the exhibitors and the visitors. As you mentioned, last year was our 40th anniversary show, and coinciding with that, we have done a complete infrastructure rebuild on the facility, setting us for another 40 years of out in the future for Husker Harvest Days. It includes 6 miles of concrete road, 7 inches thick, new security lighting, fencing, internet distribution, new electrical distribution, basically a brand new show site right here, rebuilt within the grounds where it used to be.
What is the purpose of Husker Harvest Days?
Husker Harvest Days, a lot like Farm Progress Show, is a trade show for farmers. So it is where the folks that produce our food, fiber, and fuel can go and learn what the new products, technologies, and services are that they can use in their operation. And rather than have that trade show in Vegas or Orlando, we do it here in the country so that we can actually put the machines to work. So if they're interested in shopping for a combine, we'll have 15 different combines running in the same field where they can watch them all compete side by side.
I was looking at an aerial photo of the Husker Harvest Days site from last year, and it looks, to my untrained eye, very similar to the Farm Progress Show site. How is this show different from Farm Progress?
So it's different in the fact that it's in a little bit different geography. So as you go further west here in the Corn Belt, you get out here to the western Corn Belt area, the cow-calf and the feedlot influence is a lot heavier, so we have a lot more exhibitors that are in that business providing service to those growers. And then you get more and more irrigation the further west you go. So this is probably the best global show in terms of row crop irrigation. So a lot of pivot companies and the companies that service that industry are here. So it reflects the agriculture as you go across the Midwest.
And what are some of the highlights? Are there going to be a lot of demonstrations?
We have more than we would normally than we have at a Farm Progress Show. So here we do the combine demonstration and the tillage demonstration. The cattle handling demonstration is huge. We'll have 14 to 15 different head chute manufacturers actually running live cattle through the demonstrations. And then we also have, in addition to the UAV demos and the ride and drives, something that sets Husker apart is the haying demos. So we'll run mowers, tedders, rakes, balers, all those kinds of tools run side by side, just like folks would be used to at a Farm Progress Show.
And what are you estimating in terms of attendance?
As you go further west, the farms get larger, so you can have the same amount of acres represented on the show site with less people. So typically we'll be right at about 100,000 over the course of the 3 days. And, you know, with the renovations this year, with all the extra hype, I guess you'd say, that we're getting about this renovation, I would expect us to do that, or maybe hopefully a little bit better.
And I imagine, Matt, you've had your eye on the forecast. What do you see?
I have, and it looks fantastic. It looks like we're going to have three beautiful Chamber of Commerce weather days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and it looks like about a high of 80 and no rain in sight, which is just fantastic.
Sounds good, Matt. Tuesday through Thursday, September 11th through the 13th in Grand Island, Nebraska, Husker Harvest Days, right there in the heart of the Cornhusker State and in the Western Corn Belt. Matt, thanks a lot. Good luck.
Thank you very much, Steve.
And our thanks to Steve Alexander and to Matt Youngman, who goes from Farm Progress Show Management to Husker Harvest Days Management. Max Armstrong will be out there next week. I won't be making it to that show, but our television crew will be there, and so we'll cover all of the activities for this week in agribusiness. And since I can't be in Champaign today for the salute to Ag and Food Day, I do want to mention the names of the scholarship winners for the 2018-19 academic year who will be receiving the Orion and Gloria Samuelson scholarships today at the tailgate ramble before the football game. And I hope I don't murder these names, but here is the list. Andrew Borty from Chicago, Cook County. He's a freshman in agricultural communications. Jerry Brockett of Greenup, Illinois, Cumberland County, senior in agricultural education. Laura Lindau of Montgomery, Illinois, in Kane County, sophomore in agricultural and biological engineering sciences. Matthew Robb of St. Joseph in Champaign County, senior in agricultural and consumer economics. Matthew Runyon of Noble, Illinois, Richland County, senior in crop sciences. Justin Vozo of Dunlap, Illinois, Peoria County, senior in natural resources and environmental sciences. And Madison Wilson of Philo, Illinois, in Champaign County. He is a freshman in the College of Aces, and he's not declared a major as of yet, but he's just a freshman, so he's got a lot of time to make that decision on picking a major. So congratulations to the scholarship winners. We hope the scholarship funds will add to your educational program, and we look forward to hearing from these people as they pursue their education and a career in the world of agriculture. Congratulations to them all. Coming up on the second half hour of the Saturday morning show, Naomi Bloom is going to talk markets with us. She's from Stuart Peterson in West Bend, Wisconsin. And we check in with her every once in a while. Bright lady when it comes to talking markets, what might be impacting the price, and what we might be getting number-wise in the September crop report. That'll be coming out next week as well. And so we hope you'll stay with us for all of that. And thank you. We're at, 25 minutes before 6 here on WGN Radio Chicago. A lot more to talk about this morning, including an action that benefits Illinois farmers, at least, for this harvest season. announced by Governor Bruce Rauner yesterday. We'll get to that a little bit later. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says. It's brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. And I am Orion, this morning, talking about the creation of a new career opportunity. If you're looking for an easy way to keep your toilet bowls rust-free, I have the answer. Rust Guard is the in-tank toilet bowl cleaner that protects against rust and hard water stains with every flush. And Rust Guard is safe to use on plumbing and septic systems, and it will not harm pets. That's Rust Guard. Check us out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. After watching the beginning of the Supreme Court hearings on Capitol Hill last week, I have reached the conclusion that we have created a new job opportunity here in the United States. I have entitled the new job opportunity, quote, professional protester. Who are these people that seem to show up at every issue in the country if they disagree with the issue, whether it be on Capitol Hill or elsewhere? Who are these people? How much do they know about the issue they are protesting, or are they simply protesters for hire? Who pays for their being at the event? Who pays their travel expenses? Who pays their salaries? These are people I don't know much about. But I do have a question about their right to free speech when it's taking away my right to free speech. If I disagree with the protesters, they march, they shout me down, and they perform for the TV cameras anywhere in the country. I don't like it, but I'm afraid we are going to have to live with it because while they are exercising their right of free speech, they are taking away my right of free speech by shouting me down, yelling in a loud voice over everything I say about what I believe. Whatever happened to civilized discussions and debates where both parties get to state their opinions, be heard, and then the public can make their choices as to what they believe is correct. But screaming at someone trying to make a point, valid or not, simply shows me the screamer is not only impolite, but ignorant, and doesn't want what could be common sense to be heard. So let's get back to respect for opinions of other people, hear them out, then we can continue to agree or disagree. But I'm afraid we have created a professional protester career. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And at 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, Max Armstrong standing by with his guest to talk markets at the end of this trading week, a holiday shortened trading week. And we'll get to Max and his guest when we continue on the Saturday morning show.
In the studio with us this weekend, Naomi Bloom from Stuart Peterson. What do you think about what's happening in our corn and soybean fields now? And what we'll see from the USDA come Wednesday.
Yeah, those fields are soaked. They're just underwater in so many places, and they just can't take a break from the rain. So it'll be interesting to see the early harvest that we all thought was going to happen maybe is not going to happen like we were thinking. And the USDA report next week, we're already expecting them to not do too much with yields, mostly keep it in line with what they said in August, which is big numbers. So we're looking at a good sized crop out there. And then hopefully the rain will stop and the harvest can get underway on time.
If there were to be a yield surprise come Wednesday from USDA, would it most likely be on the soybean side?
It would be, and the surprise would be if it was substantially higher than what trade is anticipating. The recent crop tours are saying more like 53 bushel. And if the USDA does confirm that, that's priced into the market already. But the bigger picture shows that ending stocks then swell to 900 million bushels, and that's the biggest ever in the United States. And it's just going to keep a pressure on prices, and it's going to keep pressure on basis. Basis are on the Mississippi River in Iowa is a dollar under on soybeans, which is unheard of. In the Dakotas, it's a dollar 50 under. So unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get anything friendly on this report, but I can't imagine it being anything more negative than what we've already been trading and talking about.
How well situated are your farmer customers to store, to put that grain away for a while?
Did they
get it all cleared out?
Yeah, no. I think a lot of people were waiting for the summer rally that never happened. And so they've been pricing little bits along the way, like the end of July, throughout August, knowing that prices likely weren't going to come back in full measure. And so they've been selling what they can, but it seems like with most people, there's always a little bit something left, and they're really surprised now with this wide basis. And they're, you know, wondering what to do. So the conversation has been, well, do I store it? And we say, well, the futures price may come up, but what if your basis doesn't come up? Because then you're still not getting those prices that you're hoping for, and then that goes into the conversation about the payment from the government and trying to use that as a way to help with the loss of prices that we've had.
What do you feel will be the sense of urgency, if any, in bringing this crop in? And I'm asking specifically, well, you know, it's not exciting to see the kind of prices we have right now, but when you look out at those fields and we're hearing chatter, especially about corn standability problems and this fungus that has resulted, apparently, especially in the northern Illinois, southern Wisconsin region, we've been hearing, in weakened corn stalks.
Yeah, we have just started been hearing that also, and it is something to monitor. I don't know how that would affect trade. I don't know how it's going to affect things down the road. It is something, I will say, that is on the very back burner of trade talk, and that could really come to the front marketplace sooner than later. And how that would affect harvest, there still is just so much old crop for corn that came to market, and elevators are full, and we're expecting to have bigger crops. So I don't think that basis improves over the top unless, you know, something substantial is happening with the market and the marketplace in terms of maybe E85, or if we can get the export markets picked up too.
Given the fact there's so much negativity priced in to the market already, if there is some trade positive news, if there is some ethanol positive news, will it move the needle a little bit in your mind? And will it provide maybe some pricing opportunity here at harvest, perhaps?
Here's my best estimate for what is going to be happening in probably the next 2 months, is that I'd really strongly feel that the corn market is bottoming. I feel that the price is bottoming, but we don't have that news to get the market to work higher. Yes, we're all aware that next year the global ending stocks are going to be the tightest in history. But if soybean prices stay as low as they are, we're going to see a lot more acres shift to corn next year. So that's going to solve the tight ending stocks problem. And with the soybean market, we just have that supply surplus out there. And it's going to be probably a marketplace that doesn't see too much momentum for prices, more of a sideways trading range. So meaning corn futures, 350 for December futures absolutely holds a support. In the short term, we don't have any reason to get the prices above 365. If we can get through 365, we'll go to 380 real quick, but this is the futures price. And on the soybean side of things, November beans have solid support at 825 with resistance at 850 on charts for futures. But we don't have a reason to get prices through there. And so we're going to be watching to make sure that those support levels hold. And in order to get the marketplace to move higher, we need confirmation that China is going to be buying some beans from us. Because right now what they've said is that they're going to be reducing their imports by 9.5% this coming year. And that they're going to be buying like 70 million metric tons from Brazil. And then so what's needed then is an additional 20 million metric tons. Based on this reduction, I mean, we are out of the marketplace. So we need some magic to happen sooner than later. And we need maybe other countries to start buying our products, or we would need bad weather in South America this winter, seriously, in order to get this bean market moving higher. Just because there is global ending stocks that are the largest in history and U.S. ending stocks that are the largest in history. So the soybean market, for the first time in years, is not the big story anymore.
We're sitting here less than 2 months away ahead of the midterm elections, and knowing the propensity for political shenanigans and actions to be timed to the political calendar, what is the possibility in the mind of the trade that there could be some very positive news relative to China ahead of those midterm elections? And if that is the case, will there be at least some kind of a market reaction in your mind?
That is a huge point, and one that I am watching equally as much as yield numbers. If that could happen, where a miraculous last-minute friendly trade notion happened just in time for midterm elections, the marketplace will respond, and the futures price will definitely jump higher because the funds have been short in this marketplace. The trade is looking for some friendly news out there. And if we can have that, if we can see and have the confirmation that the export market is moving and that the basis is improving along the river, if those things can happen, I think you see soybean futures rally 50 cents to a dollar within 2 weeks. But we'll see what happens at the end of October, right?
Farm organization leaders came out of a meeting with the president and the vice president and the ag secretary this week. Some of them were pretty upbeat. Some were fairly optimistic by the comments that they issued. So it'll be interesting to see, as you say. Coming back to crops for just a moment. Some of the yield reports, and I have to tell you, I do not hear many terrible soybean yield estimates from growers. As I've been quizzing them, and the numbers they give me, I quiz them a second time and say, are you kidding or are you sure? I mean, there's some big numbers being circulated around about potential soybean yield. You get into Western Illinois, there are people talking about a three-digit soybean yield. I'm talking about that area around Jacksonville.
Yeah.
As you go west of Springfield, plopped in there between Springfield and Quincy, about a possibility of 100 bushel beans. Now, certainly far more the exception than the rule, but still we're seeing bean yield numbers skewed higher than many people were thinking a month ago.
Right, and if that's the case, and if yield numbers continue to climb, it just continues the bearish argument for the marketplace on prices. And it absolutely could be quite possible. When I see farmer pictures on Twitter talking about their crops, I'm like, how many pods are on that plant? You know, I'm just counting, looking at this photo. And I've never seen soybeans like this in my life. It's amazing. So we'll keep an eye on what is actually out there at harvest as we get closer to it.
We get 60 days away from this point as we're visiting. We'll have a much clearer picture, I think, in more ways than one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully it'll be an upbeat one.
Let's hope, right? Let's get some positive demand news. That would really help things along.
Is there anything else that your growers are sharing with you or that you are sharing with them that we should hear?
Mostly producers just wondering and watching about timing of cash sales. That's the biggest focus right now. Is it worthwhile to re-own with call options? What's the realistic value you can receive on things? And so just the emphasis on, while you have a little bit of downtime before harvest, it is important to brush up on your marketing skills. I've got a lot of people calling to just inquire. And that's when it's fun because I enjoy math and showing how if you buy this call option, this is what it could return on your investment if the market goes up 40 cents or if the market goes up only 20 cents. And so a lot of times marketing is the thing that's on the back burner. But I think with the recent price action, it needs to be forefront on producers' minds, especially going forward. If it ends up being a lean year again for prices, we have to be more aggressive and on our toes to make sure we're nailing the timing of cash sales. It's money in your pocket, and we have to be aggressive on that. And then if it's appropriate to use any futures or options for various reasons, then we'll do it. And if it's not needed for the time being, then that's okay too. So make sure you have your marketing plan in check. Understand your local markets and what's going on, and be thinking about the whole big picture and the weighted average price of your farm and your bushels going forward for 2019.
Recalling the change of the scenario around Memorial Day this spring, how many of your growers did, in fact, take advantage of that higher price scenario that we had before the end of May?
Yeah, I would say a good portion of them had been plugging away with their cash sales, I think without question on old crop and new crop. But of course, in hindsight, it wasn't enough. And then once the market starts falling, there's never, of course, enough that you can do in hindsight. Right. So I would say cash sales weren't as aggressive as they had been in years past because the high came 3 weeks early. In hindsight, of course, the puts that were bought, never enough puts. And so
Will that sharpen our focus then in this harvest season, you think?
I think absolutely. I think the threat of the black swan, and in this case, going forward, a black swan doesn't have to be perceived as a negative thing. What if we have a black swan in terms of positive trade news? And on top of that, what if we have positive news as far as the E85 goes? Those are things that can make the market turn higher instantly. And you got to have a scenario plan in place in case the market all of a sudden takes off higher. What are realistically the higher levels that it can go to? Where are you going to make your cash sales? And just when the market starts going higher, that's when all of a sudden you start hearing the $8 corn guys start speaking up. And so you got to be able to tune out the noise and be thinking about realistically what's possible for your farm.
Great point. Good to see you again, Naomi. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Naomi Bloom with Stuart Peterson.
The political conversations that matter.
On the Sunday Spin, call it a ROM show. Mayor Rahm Emanuel's decision not to seek re-election to a third term. We'll speak to political strategist Michael Golden about what it means. Plus, the Tribune's Bill Ruthart has the latest on who's in and who's out. And we'll talk to State Senate Republican leader Bill Brady about the GOP races in November.
The Sunday Spin with Chicago Tribune political reporter Rick Pearson tomorrow morning at 7 on 720 WGN.
You deserve the wedding you've always dreamed of. You deserve natural, unsurpassed beauty, limestone bluffs, cascading waterfalls, complete with a horse-drawn carriage. You deserve all-inclusive, full-service dinner and dancing in a historic reception lodge and relaxation in cozy log cabins. You deserve the magic of White Pines Resort, just 90 minutes west of Chicagoland, nestled in White Pines Forest State Park in Oregon, Illinois. Book your fairy tale wedding today at whitepinesweddings.com. Take a deep breath. You need a break from the chaos of every day. You need cozy cabins, campfires, s'mores, and ghost stories under the stars. You need White Pines Resort in Oregon, Illinois, just 90 minutes west of Chicagoland. Nestled in the heart of White Pines Forest State Park, you'll find relaxation, homestyle cooking, live entertainment, and memories to cherish. Stay in a real log cabin midweek for only $99. Go to whitepinesresort.net and book your escape today.
Consider it done with ABC. Our family's been available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for more than 65 years. ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Book your appointment today at 4abc.com and consider it done.
Farming is a competitive business, and you need every advantage you can get if you want to lead the field. Which is why more and more farmers across America are entrusting their crop handling to Brandt. Brandt has earned a superb reputation on the Canadian prairie. And now they've set up shop right in the heart of the U.S. Corn Belt, turning out made in the USA swing-away augers and other products designed specifically for U.S. corn and soybean growers. From their 200,000-square-foot plant in Bloomington, Illinois, Brandt's full line of augers, belts, carts, and vacs is designed to help you get the job done faster, every time, and is supported by a network of strong dealers across the United States. You can get their story firsthand at Husker Harvest Days at Grand Island, Nebraska, September 11th through the 13th. Come see the folks from Brandt. They'll be at Lot 718 at Husker. Want to be number one? Get yourself some worry-free performance from Brandt and lead the field.
It's 4 minutes before 6 o'clock. A couple of other items we want to cover. Governor Bruce Rauner traveled to Auburn, Illinois yesterday to the farm of Brent and Blake Ladage to make the announcement and declare a harvest season emergency, allowing farmers to apply to the Illinois Department of Transportation to get a free permit to haul 10% over their gross vehicle weight and axle weight limits on state highways. And local road authorities will have the ability to grant a similar permit or to waive the permit requirement on roads in their jurisdiction as well. Rich Ebert, president of the Illinois Farm Bureau, said, "We appreciate Governor Rauner declaring an emergency situation for the 2018 harvest season, especially in light of the declining incomes and market turmoil which farmers are currently facing." So check with your local road authorities to follow through if you're going to need that waiver on weight requirements. And, of course, the U.S.-Canada trade talks, as one headline on Reuters said, grind on, but final issues unresolved didn't make it this week on the deadline that had been established to finalize the U.S.-Canada trade talks as part of the new rewrite on the NAFTA agreement. And so they'll continue to work on it. As a matter of fact, the Canadian delegation is really coming out as optimistic. It's going to happen. The source said we're down to three issues, Chapter 19, the cultural issues, and dairy. And we've created leverage and brought Canada to the table. Part of our problem is that Canada has been backsliding on its commitments on dairy. And so that is the latest at the end of yesterday's trade talks in Washington, D.C., between Canadian and American trade officials. And then the other item we want to talk about, is that field survey taken by Allendale, a market analytical firm, and every year they take a survey on the yield per acre and the total production. And according to their survey, the 2018 survey yield came up with a per acre average of 177.68 bushels to the acre, and a soybean yield of 52.17 bushels to the acre. Total production for 2018, corn 14.5 billion bushels, soybeans 4.6 billion bushels. That's the estimate from the Allendale survey, covering 86% of corn production and 83% of soybean production in the United States. It's the 29th year that our friends in Allendale have conducted the annual nationwide producer yield survey. And that's our time. We'll miss you down to Champaign-Urbana today, but have a good time at the Salute to Ag and Food Day. And we want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank Bob Ferguson for making it all happen with his engineering skill. And we'll be talking to you next week at this same time to talk agriculture here on WGN Radio.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.